Well, good morning, and welcome to my presentation. Now, I'm usually used to, by way of introduction, I'm usually used to talking in front of a group of people I already know. So, since I don't know many of you, what I have to say is there's two rules about presentations. One of those is don't forget to breathe. And the other one is never apologize for forgetting to breathe. And I'll probably have to do that later on as we get through this. My name is Bill Wessey, and as it says up here, I'm on the Open Protocol support team. Just a quick bit of history. I started working at Microsoft in 1984. When I came on board, there were two support groups, applications and languages. There were 37 people, and my has it grown. The tools have gotten much better, and indeed over the last 5 or 6 years, I think they've really taken off, and there's a lot of very happy people in support with what we have now to be able to do diagnosis on problems out in the field. So I'm very happy to be able to present some of these tools to you. It's going to be more of a cook's tour than anything else. I will run the utilities, but as far as getting deep into a debug, that's really not going to be something that's going to be too useful at this point, mostly because of we all know about that. Symbols, where are the symbols, how many do I have, and of course we're going to be kind of truncated in what we can do with the debugger, since it would be inappropriate for us to go into source mode on that, which that would give us all the ability to do local symbol examinations and things. So there's going to be a lot of stuff that I won't be able to show you live with the debugger, so we'll kind of do more of an introduction on the the actual tool itself. So we're going to start out with a bit of background, a little use of the debuggers. I'll focus on WinDBG, all the other things, you know, KD and all the other cute little command line debuggers that come with it. They all use the same core engine, so we'll just use the pretty user interface on that. Then we'll get into something called time travel tracing, and I'll decode what IDNA means later on. Bit on the event tracing for Windows, which very much fun, and a little bit on the Windows resource kit, system internals, a few demonstrations, and hopefully we'll have time for questions at the end if I don't talk too fast. If I do present anything here, please feel free to ask me a question during the presentation. That shouldn't be any problem. I won't say, well, let's wait till later. That's not necessary. So. As you probably noted yesterday, a lot of protocol issues, in fact, most of them we can get with a good network capture, at least get an idea what's going on where. Of course, the scenarios get rather complex when we start getting into wide area networks. It gets a little bit tough to, fire up the Wireshark or network monitor, whatever you use, on both ends so we can get a good simultaneous trace and see if anybody's been messing with the data on the way through. Very common thing. Of course, we do need a much larger tool set if we want to get deeper into that. Like, well, why did this particular function return that code? That's unexpected. Now, what we usually do is a post-mortem process dump or a live debug. In the past, that's been pretty much the case for server down issues and things. Of course, now we have some newer tools which can be very helpful. One of those being, of course, time travel tracing, because that gives us the ability to go back and kind of do a post-mortem live trace through a process. And of course, logging. And that's a huge topic. ETW is the preferred method at this point. And as we go back into the past with the NT platform, I don't know if any of you have run into net log on logging. We've had a lot of fun with trying to parse those files out, because not every text entry in the log is going to have the same format. Some things will come out, oh, here's my process ID in decimal. The other one will give that to you in hexadecimal. Same with thread IDs. Some will have parens around it, square brackets. So there was really no rigor on the actual output format, which did kind of complicate post-analysis. So that's why ETW. So now for the debuggers, WinDBG, and I'll try not to call it Winbag. We stopped calling it that a while ago once it really started to improve. That's the most common debugger. It is a pretty good feature set. We can do live kernel or user mode debugging. And of course, we can read crash dumps, whether they're, you know, process dumps or whole system dumps. And of course, that is the foundation for time travel tracing. Now, that's the only way we can do kernel level or driver issue debugging. There's really nothing else out there that I'm aware of that can do it. There probably is, but I'm not aware of it. So, and as it says, that's mostly, you know, crash hang issues where that's going to come into play. So they're freely available. There's the link for it. Hopefully we'll have this, I believe we have all these presentations posted for your download. Is that correct? Will? I'm sorry. Yes. Okay, thank you. So now we do have base symbol packages out there and, you know, 32 and 64-bit versions of the debugger. Now, one thing I would like to point out, if you have an MSDN account, we do have some check builds of the for instance, Windows. My brain's not working. 2008 R2, as well as symbols, both for you know, just the standard build, as well as the check build. So what I'll be doing later on with WinDBG is I do have a check build R2 VM running, and we'll break into that and take a look around and see what sort of symbols are available. So what I typically do, now the packages that download from the public will try to put themselves into program files. Typically I'll put it on the system drive WAC debuggers because, of course, time travel tracing likes to be in a subdirectory of that. And I like to keep things all in one spot being that way. So, of course, that's all up to your option, and you can cause time travel tracing to load there too. Now, TTT is not available on the web at this point in time. We can supply that to you on an as-need basis, you know, given what you have going on. Exactly why that is, I don't know, but I would suspect that's because it's still a fairly new technology, and at some point I would anticipate we might do that, make that available generally, but I can't predict on that. It's not my particular call. So. WinDBG, the whole package has got NTSD, CDB, and KD support, so you can, you know, debug apps, services, drivers, you know, the Windows kernel. It'll do 32-bit Intel Itanium and x64-bit platforms, and of course you can debug NT4 through R2 on all those, which works really nice. User kernel mode. You can do live targets, dump files, local and remote targets. This is the fun part. This is what we would call the crash cart scenario. You've got a server and you really just don't want to run the debugger on there and break into LSAS. You know, you hit a breakpoint in there and well, it's possible to hit something that's gonna make everything else you have go down. Especially on a loaded server, that's not a good idea. So typically what'll happen is for a you know, field response, what we call a RUS, an on-site, somebody will come in and set up have a good list of breakpoints with just some output to see where we get to in a particular scenario so that we don't actually clang the box and knock it down. Or if we're all lucky enough, there will be a you know, a laboratory set up where the problem can be reproduced, or reprod, as we like to call it. So now when you want to use the 64-bit debugging tools, of course, you know, the X64 version allows you to debug 32 and 64-bit, but if you're on a Itanium or 64-bit processor, you should use that particular package for it, because the 32-bit debugger and 64-bit targets are just not a good idea. I haven't even tried it, so I wouldn't recommend it. So. If you're going to debug your own application, in case you happen to do some Windows widgetry, if you have your source path, you can it will go into source mode. It's very smart about lining up the assembly with the with the actual source lines. As long as you have your PDB files, you're in good shape on that. And it does use the standard Visual Studio symbol formats. Excuse me. So any of the standard CodeView PDB symbol files will pretty much give you what you need. Now, As we'll get into later, you know, you can view the source codes at breakpoints, variables, stack traces, memory. It's got a nice command window for a variety of targets. It's pretty smart. It allows you don't have to keep on retyping the same thing in. It'll always remember the last command you gave it. And so if you need to, you know, just step, it's, you know, just the enter key over and over again. So, and as I mentioned earlier with the kernel mode or crash cart scenario, you really do need two machines, and it does allow you to, you know, connect to two systems via the, you know, the serial port IEEE 1394, and of course, name pipes, which for me, that means Hyper-V. And that doesn't have to be a VM on the same machine. You can do that to another machine. So with the standard name pipe, you know, whack server name, whack pipe name, that sort of thing. And I suppose I should have said backslash, but we all know about that one. So now to get Windows to be able to be debugged, you do have to do a few things. The first thing is get out a command prompt and just copy use bcdedit to copy your current profile to a debug entry profile. I haven't. I might get out and run bcdedit, but there's a lot of good things. You can enumerate all the different profiles, and I'm probably using the wrong word for it, but it's essentially, you know, the replacement for the old boot.ini. So typically after that, I'll reboot, select debug entry, and on the boot screen, and then update all my settings. And I would have to look up what NOUMEX means, so we'll probably get into that a bit later. And then, of course, we want to turn the debug on and boot debug on if you want to reboot and try to get in during the startup. So with the WinDBG, we do have symbol server technology built in. And that will allow you to do things like specify a local directory to copy all the symbols that you need down into while asking for a particular external symbol server. And some of my colleagues and some of the other escalation engineers have got what you would call an Uber list of these things that goes on and on for, I don't know, I think the last time I counted, somebody had about 14 symbol servers set up for all their sources, but they were dealing with more than just Windows. So. Now, typically, you'll set your symbol path. You want to bring them down to, let's say, C:\web symbols, and then bring those down from our symbol point. That's a pretty standard thing to do. So, of course, you could just download them locally and then point your symbol path directly to your current symbols directory. Now, again, on the MSDN images. You'll be getting a different symbol package because there are MSIs up there with the symbols in it, and of course you can point those to, you know, drop wherever you want on your system. Excuse me. So I'd like to run through just a few of the basic WinDBG commands. Of course, one of the first things we want to do is either load particular symbols for a module that we're interested in. Or more commonly, and I apologize for not putting on here, the first thing when I break in is I do a bang reload, which will just reload everything. Makes it a lot easier to start looking at all the loaded modules are, resolves everything, and really sets up the internal symbol resolver to speed you up later. You don't want to enter one command and wait for everything to load, because when you get that busy signal from the WinDBG command line, you may have to wait a while. And there's a few other little tricks I'll show you when we start up. The symbol resolver has got a couple of modes it can run in. There's really one thing that's exposed on the interface, which is unqualified symbol resolution. You want to shut that off, because if you were to say, you know, let's take a look at this thing using this symbol name, and you say, you know, struct foo or something like that, you're going to be there for a while, because it's going to interpret struct. I did that once, and it, let's see, I think it took 10 minutes. So, you know, there's a lot to go through on that one. Of course, you can list whatever loaded modules you have by you know, by name. Now, it doesn't know anything much more about just standard characters in the star. I don't think there's a question mark operator in there, so that's not really anything like a regular expression. It's more like just, you know, minor pattern matching. In the VM that I'm going to break into later, that's basically what we're going to look at is Serv2, which is the, well, SMB2 server. Of course, now you can examine the symbols in a particular module, and in this case, I've just picked a few of interest out of the rather large list that comes in there. I want to see, well, what do we have that's SMB2? Okay, execute query directory, query info, execute read, and I haven't memorized the list, so I don't know if there's a, what was that, SMB2 execute negotiate. There probably is. That would be kind of nice if we had that. Maybe we can break into that later. So X can also be used to, just all by itself without any options, to take a look at the locals in a particular function, whatever one you happen to be in. Of course, it does require source to get any information at that level. So now we have a whole, it does have a very rich set of breakpoints. Of course, the most important, not the most important, but the most common one is just, you know, breakpoint. You know, if you don't give it a number, it'll just say, well, if I got three breakpoints in here, this one's going to be number four. Excuse me, number three, my apologies. That's that one base versus zero base thing. So you can give it a number for the breakpoint, like 9 if you want, and then there's a number of options on it, but that's all in the help. It would take forever to go through all these. I'm not going to waste your time with the details at this point in time. I'm more of an operational. When do we need to find out? Well, let's get the help out and do it. So you can either give it an address or a, well, for instance, you could say set a breakpoint on SRV2 bang SMB2 execute query directory. So you can give it a symbol to set a breakpoint on. You don't necessarily need to use BM to do that. You could just regular BP will also work for that. They tend to overload these things. The command string can be lots of fun. Typically, you'll see something like you know, KN semicolon G. I mean, you know, dump the stack with frame numbers and then go and continue, that sort of thing. Just for the real quick and dirty. The command string can get extremely complex. We do have some additional command extensions that allow you to say things like .printf, which is kind of interesting, and it will take a lot of printf style parameters and addresses. That's a whole study in itself. I believe you can also cause it to run scripts. There, you can script these things. So, obviously, an unresolved breakpoint. Well, if you just try to set a breakpoint on an unresolved symbol, that turns into a set unresolved. So, when the module loads, hopefully, WinBag will find it and set the breakpoint on it. That does not always work. I have found situations where it does not work, and I can't give you a good set of guidance on that one, since I don't get into the source code on this thing. Of course, you can clear, disable, enable, list them, all those kind of things. And of course, our probably one of the most useful ones is break on access. It allows you to break on, you know, execute, read, write, or on an I/O port, for instance. And that's where, for instance, let's say we're debugging a service and we know that some struct, some field. If somebody hits that field, we know we're going to be doing something else over here later on. Because you know, when we get into multi-threaded things, it's like we take a look back here at the serve execute. Excuse me, let me go back. I'm talking ahead of myself. Execute query directory is not query directory. That actually will take, you know, the current frame package, which is wrapped up in heaven knows what at this point. I haven't traced this one, and throw that into a work queue. So some other thread's going to take care of that, which means, okay, how are we going to deal with this? That gets a little bit fun. If you know what, for instance, the target structure that's being set in, you can set a break on access on an interesting field there, and you know, just break right in when you need. So, any questions on these? Or I'll just go ahead then. Okay. And of course, Most importantly, yes. I'm sorry? Yes, you can. The question is, can you set up expressions to cause breakpoints? Yes. I would have to take a look into the syntax. I believe it's like, it has been quite a while. I might, can you approach me after we're done later on, and I'll go look it up. I have to tell you, I used to do this all the time, and it's been about 4 years since I've had had occasion to really get into quote-unquote breakpoints that will do things on particular conditions. So I can't be really detailed on that. But you can say, expression if, go, else, dump the stack or something like that. Yes, you do have that option. So. Now, of course, with dumping the stack, there's tons of options here. You can tell it to display frame numbers like KN, and it's smart enough if you omit any of these in here, we can just say KN, for instance. And those frame numbers are very intriguing because you can say, here's an interesting function in this particular stack. Well, dot frame N, and then dump all the local variables and see what's really going on in that one. So, of course, I'm not sure of anybody using KB very often. My favorite one is KV, frame pointer omission, and I'd have to go back and review that. When we start getting into applications and things, that's where that will often come into play. So, hide source lines. This one would be a little bit more helpful for just for ease of reading, because sometimes when you get multiple lines, it's all your own preference. Typically, I'm a KN kind of person, but there's a lot of other options. If you're on a multiprocessor target, you can specify the processor number that you want to dump the stack for. Highly important, of course. Without that argument, it'll go ahead and just do it on the current processor. The VMs I've got are all, of course, single processor, so that does simplify the scenario. Of course, now we want to be able to step or trace through things, so stepping is, will of course step across any function calls, that sort of thing, which, I've made the mistake of trying to trace instead of step and get myself into a real mess. And there are ways you can get out of it. You can step to the next return, for instance, as well as step to a particular address, next branch instruction, next caller return, which is very helpful in case you do manage it. Well, I thought I was stepping, but I was tracing. Okay, well, then step back here and then step once more. We're back where I want to be. So. And again, there's a lot of help on the details on these. It traces pretty much the same set of options, except that it will trace through calls if you happen to run into those. So they're basically the same thing. Now, for just to let you know, I'm not touching, but maybe about 1/20th or 1/30th of all the general commands that are available. So these are just the big hits that I find to be used most commonly. Of course, we can dump an ASCII string or a Unicode string, and those are case sensitive. You don't necessarily need to give it the width. If it's null terminated, yes, it will find that. And if it's not null terminated, as we find in a few of the older SMB commands, you might want to give it a width, for instance. So you could, if you don't have a width on it, on a non-terminated one with who knows what packed onto the end of it, you can get a little bit of extra gobbledygook on the display, and the WinDBG display can handle Unicode display, so we will get all the characters that are on the base character set it uses. Excuse me, the font. My apologies. So now you can display a type, for instance, DT underscore PEB address, PEB being the program execution block. That and any other symbol you've got. For instance, let's say you have a local, which is a pointer to a struct foo. You can say, let's say that's an EAX right now, or REAX, whatever. You could say DT foo, and then use this nifty little kind of operator function called poi, which will say treat this as a pointer too. So you don't have to say foo star or p foo or whatever you're using there. So there's more than one way to get there. Now the display type, that's the one where you can get into trouble if you're gonna let the symbol engine try to resolve unqualified symbols, because one character off and you could be waiting a little while. So DV allows you to display local variables. Typically people will give it a slash V, uppercase V switch, just to be verbose, and it will tell you where all the locals and parameters are, which can be extremely helpful, especially if you want to break later on, set a breakpoint on an address that where we mess with that, or break on write or something. Registers, of course, you can display registers. Just R dot is the current register that's been touched by the register touched by the current instruction. Of course, you can specify the processor. 99 times out of 100, it's just R. It'll dump all the current registers for you, which is pretty helpful. Now, there's a lot of search options, and probably the best way to deal with this one would be to just use it, because it does have a pretty good range of things you can do. So here's where I get really thin. There's I'd say probably about 50 or 60 basic meta commands, and heaven knows how many extensions. So these are the big ones that are most important to you. If you want to I've just broke in, what processes are running, you can say bang process 00. It will list all the processes and the process addresses. In which case, that's where we would say, let's do a dot process space process address. We'll get into that process context, so whatever you do is going to work there. From there, we would do bang thread or a bang process me 7, which would dump everything. In other words, all the threads, their states, their stacks. If you were to do just a bang process, it will do that for everything on the target, and that can really take quite a while. I ran into one crash dump, which I think it was about 32 gigabytes. It took a half an hour for it to run through the through all of those, and most of that was the output. As we all know, it takes a long time to cook output for display, so that was basically where most of the load was. So we can just do a bang thread, and that should. If I remember correctly, if you just do it without parameters, it'll dump information on the current thread. And of course, there's a lot. If you want to go to a different thread, you can say, dot thread, thread address, and get there. So you can march yourself around and really have a good time with that. So that was a quick one on the general facilities. Now, of course, I'm sure just about every debugger out there has things like this, but I just wanted to give you a quick intro. So time travel tracing, IDNA, and that's infrastructure diagnostics using Nirvana architecture, and what Nirvana architecture is something I haven't got a clue. I don't believe we've published anything about it. There's very sparse information on our internal sites on it. We do have some. Not to be mixed up with IDNA. So, if you want to actually journal what happened during a particular scenario, this is probably your best tool for it. We find we're using this a lot more. So, it does allow us to do a good postmortem live trace. And that really takes a lot of pain out of doing live debug settings. Now, as I mentioned, we do have a public capture utility, and of course we'll take those back. We'll get the output files back from you, and do the postmortem analysis and take it from there. And of course, WinDBG can deal with the out files that this thing produces. Now, you don't need to actually have the debugger installed to set up and run time travel tracing. That's not necessary. So We have a lot of, you know, common options. If you want to find out all the extra things you can do, of course, you know, standard dash question mark. Now, and of course, you have to tell it which process ID, and your best way to get that is with task list. And I apologize, I'm drying out here. You do have the option to tell it whether or not you want to trace through child processes that may be spawned off. Good. And I prefer myself to do no UI. If you do not use this, there's a dialog that will come up that will allow you to stop the tracer. That will also kill the process. And that's not that can be not good for you. For instance, if you want to do a live trace on LSAS on a deployed system, you're probably going to cause some grief. So, and of course, you can tell it which where you want the output files to go. And once you start it, you can stop it just by, you know, running TTT tracer, you know, dash stop all, for instance. And you can have multiple trace sessions running, which is very nice. And you can name them. I didn't show you the name parameter, but that's easily find. That's easy to find out through the help. So just to give you a quick, I'd like to run through a bit of event tracing for Windows. Let's see how we're doing on time. Most of the server components now have our ETW enabled. And the logging for this is much more formalized than all the standard old text logging that we've had in the past with Windows. So and it's very extensive throughout the components. So the as these things have evolved, it's more like, well, here's what happened here, rather than we just try to guess where all the exceptional things are going to happen and put output there. So this one's designed a little bit more with journaling in mind. So now, we will, you know, help you set up to get a trace, and we do have some, we would like to see those for post analysis, and of course, a lot of this, you know, we've done a lot for security issues. You know, we really need to find out what's going on there. That's a very big, very important for everybody, and if you don't have private symbols, you're not going to get any log information. That's absolutely necessary for this to work. So, if we have something, if you're tracing something that makes calls into one of our processes, we can trace ours. We're not going to, be able to see anything that goes on in yours. In case you have trace logging for yours, it's going to be just, binary who knows what to us. So we're in good shape on that. Now all the tools are available from the driver kit. That's freely downloadable, and they're all in the driver kit tools tracing directory. And I think that I might actually have to, when we get to a quick demo on this, I'll have to go look up where I hid mine. So I'll just slide on here. There's four basic utilities. For this one, the first one, of course, is trace log. That's the one that will, set it up for you. Trace PDB will take it formatting instructions from a symbol file for a trace provider. But the ones you're almost going to use exclusively will be trace log and trace format. You know, where you get the log, stop the log, and then format it, read the output. So, so what we do is the trace log will get an event trace that is a .etl file, and it has all the trace messages generated by the provider. They're in a binary format, so you can't read them. And of course, you can use trace view or trace format to take those apart and see what you've got. So, trace log will start and stop the sessions. You can do private trace sessions. Kernel logger trace session. Some of that you'll see if you do a manage, I believe that's server manager. I'd have to take a look at the snap in, but if you right click the computer icon and select manage, they show up in there, and can flush all the buffers for you. Of course, list list the trace sessions, list all your registered trace providers, which is very important because how are you, you know, where's all that stored? You know, that's it. And of course, it can measure a lot of information for you know, DPCs and ISRs. So for performance, that's a nice, very good enhancement to PerfMon. So here's a quick example. You can name a trace, of course. In fact, you should. We'll give it the GUID, which is either a GUID file, or you know, you can just give it a hash mark with a curly brace GUID. That will work the same way. And tell it where you want to put the files at. And now the flags and the levels, those are on a per provider basis. So I just happened to this is just a pure sample, and then of course we want to stop it, format it, and then of course we can get out there and read it. So as I mentioned, the level defaults to zero, flag defaults to zero. So it depends on how the trace provider is written for what flags are going to make sense. Of course, you could always set the flag to FFFF and the trace level to FFFF and probably get just about everything. Although I'm not sure whether that flag is a D, might be a D word level thing. And I'm not sure if we do any sign extension on that particular parameter, so it would take a little of experimentation in case we ran into something different. Now, the server manager, diagnostics, data collector sets. Here's a short list of some of the event trace sessions that are already set up for you. And of course, the service control manager, which I've got a link there for it. And you, if you want to get one running or stopping, you can just right-click it and set the control on it, either shut it down or turn it on. Now, of course, the Windows Resource Kit. I believe we do have. There's work going on for. I think it's either the Windows 7 or 2008 Resource Kit. I don't have any good links to that at this point. So let's just stick with the 2003 Kit tools. They will work pretty well on 2008. There's a lot of things in there. Like I think it's DS ACLs and a lot of other utilities that can help you out in tearing apart what's going on. But we're more interested right now in system internals, especially process monitor, because that's a very good tool for kind of closing in on what you really need to look at, what's going on, so that perhaps if we need to get into a debug, you have a little bit more focus on or understanding on what's already happening. So the process utilities are. I'll be dealing a little bit with PROCmon at a certain point here. Could spend about 3 hours running through all of these, and they have quite a rich feature set. So process monitor, and that will let you do file system registry and process thread activity. Personally, I prefer it for the file system because that's where most of my work usually falls into, and it will. For instance, you can tell it to focus on one file in one directory and watch all the ERP activity for that one, which is can help a lot. Now that does take FileMon and RegMon out of the picture. If you try to run either of those, that'll tell you to use Process Monitor. It does have some very, very good filtering options, a lot of event property session ID optionability. It does give you good process information, thread stacks, symbol support, and it will dump everything out to a file as it goes, and so on. So as far as when we start breaking into some of the demonstrations that I like to do, I found this little thing hanging around. I thought it might be of help. You want to think of this all as LSAS itself. So we do have a lot of components running in there. This being the DSA agent, and of course our NTLM, NetLogon, DLLs, of course all the Kerberos secure SSL, and of course LSA serve itself, which also comprises SAM. So the main issue is where do we want to look? What are we interested in? If we really want to debug what's going on in NetLogon, that's where we're going to want to look for our symbols to see where we need to break in and so forth. So Yes, I did leave a link to this out there. So we're going to do what I like to do for you is just do a quick time travel trace capture. And then I do have a little script to run an ETW trace. We'll do a little process monitor and then just a short debug. So at this point, that's not questions time. Sorry about that. Time travel tracing. What I'm going to do is do a time travel trace of a Windows 7 client joining a domain. A topic dear to all our hearts, I would hope. We'll get ready to do it. Okay, and I have to break out of this because I have to do something. Okay, there we go. I had to drop my screen resolution, so a lot of my default window settings are a little bit off. So, sorry to keep you hanging there. There we are. Okay, and we want to debug LSAS. Now I've wrapped this all in a bunch of command file stuff. So there's really nothing fancy in there, other than it just sets up all the parameters and. We'll show you that at a certain point. Okay, we're ready to go. Okay, we did an OUI BG attach 500. And over to the client here. Excuse me. Now, this does take a certain amount of overhead, so the join here would normally take about half this amount of time, maybe a third. I don't believe I have the machine account pre-created, so that does add a bit extra to it. So we'll wait for the former hourglass to get tired and go away. Say again, sir? Yes, I did start the trace. No, this one is a time travel trace. Give me a second. Okay, and we are done. And in our test directory. I've already done this, and I have these out in my main system, so we can actually debug into that. So we get three files. The run file is where all the stuff is. The rest is all just all configuration info. None of that is, I don't believe any of that's human readable. So. Interesting. I believe I made a mistake during this, but that is not the point of this particular demonstration. What I wanted to do was to actually run a debug. Yep, wrong directory. My apologies. Make sure I'm in the right. I have too many copies of my debug directories here. Here we go. Okay. Sure, I have the right symbols for this. Yes, I do have the right symbols. hope you don't mind if I go back and look at my own notes. Ah, that's right, LM. Yes, indeed we do. Oh, that's right. We're in user mode. Okay, and what we want to do is LM. We'll see what symbols we have in LSAS here. And hopefully we won't be busy for too long. And again, these are the symbols that are available right off the, pretty much identical to the symbols that you can get from the debugger download point I showed you earlier. The VM and the symbols I have right now are from a unchecked build off the MSDN downloads. So, here we go. What would be interesting here? Here we are. Sorry, I got too many screens in front of me. It's hard for me to see where my cursor is. So, now I could be wrong. Maybe we're not going to hit this. One would hope that we would. So let's see what we get out of this one. I'm sorry. Yeah. The symbols themselves are not documented. They just. Yes, I'm sorry. The question was, what about where do we get knowledge about the symbols? It's essentially you have to kind of sort of know what you're looking for. Now, in this case, I look for part of a joined domain is get domain info. So I was searching around for anything that happened to match that. If I was a little smarter, I would have put that in the search pattern. So, okay, right. There we go. Yes. I'm sorry, say again. Yes. There are, as I've been reminded, and I apologize, there are public symbols available for download right from the same place you can get the debuggers themselves. And as well, if you have an MSDN account, the ISOs for the various operating systems, at least for Windows 7 and R2, there are also symbols for those right there, which are specific to that particular build. So yes, they are they're out there. Yes. Yes, there are public symbols for all of pretty much all of the, I would say pretty much all of the DLLs that are listed for the components on that LSAS diagram, but I would not say that there are for all, since I haven't looked at all of them. I would expect that the answer to that is completely, you know, it's yes. But on a case-by-case basis, we just have to take a look at the module, and I think we might be able to do that at some point. But let me see here. We did not get to our breakpoint in this case. So what I want to do is see if I can just dump all the stack information. Nope, I did something wrong. That was my problem. We don't have a whole lot of anything we have. We've actually gone to the end of the trace, so there's really nothing else left. I'll have to restart that. So, hope you don't mind. Take one more look at that. All threads, that's what I thought. Okay. Well, we've only got one thread that we actually have going on, so rather than try to guess at what we're going to hit, probably be better if I went into just to show you what the live debug looked like. So, but yeah, if we did actually have a function target we knew was going to get hit that was exported in the symbols, then you know we can just trace to that and continue on where we want. That's very useful in cases where you have something back up and back down the call tree about three legs back, does something which affects you at this point. It's much easier to go back with this sort of thing and get that. In fact, that's always the trouble with debugs, is you don't know where the problem is until you find what it's affected, and then trying to work your way back through things can be quite difficult. And I think the primary scenario for that is a memory corruptor. So who knows when that's going to mess things up. Okay, here we go. Okay, now we have a list of all our processes, and what we want to do is find our friend LSAS. Oops, sorry about that. Force decode user, okay. Much better. Okay. DT. And here is our process execution block. And what do we care about with the process? Let's just take a look at the more interesting things in here. Where do we, there's our heaps. And our process heaps are here. It's probably not the right one. Okay, no, I'm off by one on that one. Just run the threads on this. Oops. Kernel mode, not user mode. So here's our current thread, or what if we want to do. We want to. Sorry. We'll take a quick look at all the threads running in here and see if we can find something interesting. Take a quick look at that. There's quite a few threads in LSA. This one is on that one of my VMs. There's nobody talking to it, so it's pretty standard. Let's see what we can do here. Mostly just worker threads. We're probably not going to have a whole lot going on in here that's interesting. In fact, indeed not. Can do. So what we have is a boring process here, but it's pretty much just wanted to show you the just the basic parts of the tool, but this is the important one here. That's the one we want to make sure that is not checked. Otherwise, if I were to make a mistake and typed something other than PEB on that. Would have stuffed another character in there. We could have waited for a while, but I'm not going to do that. So there again is our PEB. So we do have, thread execution blocks. That's what I had meant to go through. Sorry. Don't type. All I'm not in that thread context, but one of the things we find with the threads is there are fields that'll take us to, you know, find if we're in we can get to a kernel mode thread if there is one, and vice versa. So there's just tons of stuff in terms of what's available in here. And again, this is all public. As far as the you know, definition of what a given field is, well, you know, that's another thing entirely. But we do we. Actually, that would be the what is that, Windows Internals book, I believe. I'm not sure whether it's online or not, but it is an MS Press book. I think we're at version 3 on that one. And it does break down most of the major system structures that you'd be interested in. I believe these are also broken down in there. As far as the level of detail, I haven't been in the book for about 3 months, so I couldn't speak to that in particular. The question is about, is there any documentation on what's exported by various DLLs and LSAS and things? Actually, the best place to look for that is you know, the open specification documents, because essentially what we're doing is documenting the interfaces and behaviors on those. Now, some of the internal names and some of the internal symbols you may see, and some of the symbols you may see in there may not necessarily match up perfectly with the names that we have externally. But generally speaking, you run into a published interface like NetIR logon, get domain info, that will be there. So there is not, to my knowledge, an organized breakdown out in the public of you know, what's on a particular component. But if you do have Visual Studio, there is what is that? Dump bin. You can get exports out of any component on a Windows system with dump bin. Sure. There you go, sir. Sorry.
For the breakdown the system, there are books, you know, talking about the Windows system and Windows internals. That the breakdown all the talking about the LSA system breakdown all the component modules in the Windows. So I think the best book you can read is in Windows internals. Yeah. And as the symbols, as the symbols are based on the library module, you can download just specify the specific the DL. You do not need to download whole the symbols for Windows. Just specify if you want to debug. Yeah, one such kind of specific DL. Just download such symbols. That's enough. It's a small. But public symbol has a lot of information. Yeah, that's, I think, and as WinDB is published, so you can download from the from website, and there will have document there, document the such kind of operations and the symbols where you can get the public symbols. And for Windows, breakdown system breakdown, you can read the book of Windows internals. I think it's the latest version, the version 5, to reflect the Windows 2.8R2. Okay.
Thank you. See, we're running a little short of time, so I'll just get into this ETW trace. Okay. That's what I knew I was going to have a problem with, so give me a half a moment. I will get all my information here. tools tracing. Okay. There we go. What I want to do here is probably won't have anything interesting in here. And there's our log file name. And we want to do a format on that. And take a look at what we've got. There aren't any events as I figured, but I just wanted to, really just wanted to run it on a provider and show you. Of course, we don't have any buffers, events, formats, errors, but we do have just basically the text format. Once the formatter gets done with it, then you've got a considerable amount of stuff. But as I said, it was a little bit short. Didn't have a good scenario to set up to build some output. But there we, that's really what I have on that one. So, and finally, we wanted to go into the system internals, which I do believe I have on here. Somewhere along the line, I've lost my system internals. Rather than waste your time on downloading and getting that, I think it would be best to see if you have any questions that you'd like to ask me at this point. I messed up on having that one, so my apologies. Any questions? I think that's about it, and I'd like to thank you very much for your time.
Any other questions? Great. Well, thanks, Bill. Bill is
thank you.
One of our EPs that works on the protocol document.
Have a second.